there was one group of people I did not recognize when I talked about Workday, but you ladies are doing too good a job feeding us. Seems like the guys can't get off their chairs after they're done eating too quick, but you've done an excellent job, and Mildred, you've done an excellent job of coordinating that, and I just want to recognize all of you as well. My text this morning is James chapter 1, verses 2 to 4. It's going to be an interesting Thanksgiving sermon. I did look back, and I did preach Thanksgiving last year, and I thought, well, I'll just preach that one again, see if anybody remembers. There were a few facts that I gave in that one that you probably would have remembered. So some of you would have caught it pretty quick, and I decided, no, I'm not going to do that. But I struggle with it because James chapter 1 is really not, or at least the verses that I'm going to be looking at this morning, is really not a couple verses that I would connect to being thankful. But yesterday, as I watched things happen in Friday, it kind of came together. It made sense, I think, why God was moving me in this direction. And I've titled it, Being Thankful in Conflict. And conflict is not the word I wanted, but it was the only one I could put in there that made sense. And when I say conflict is part of that. But being thankful in adversity, there's a whole lot of things you can put in there. And you can take that word out and put in whatever you want this morning. But, you know, I was listening, I think it was Friday, in my running around and being the delivery boy. I was listening to a program, and I don't remember if it was a secular talk show or if it was Focus on the Family. But there was a guy talking. It was a guy that had been in Iraq, and he was talking about being thankful. And he talked about the idea that, you know, it doesn't really matter where we are. There's somebody that's in worse shape than we are. And I remember a couple of years ago when I was going through my physical situation, and I was frustrated with the doctor because he wouldn't do what he said he was going to do. And I was like, why and why? And finally the PA looked at me and she said, well, if we damage the vein and we can't stop the bleeding, your leg has to go. And I said, oh. Well, I was talking to Miss Mary Carver. We had gone over there for some reason, and she was wanting to know. She was really concerned about what was happening, and I was telling her the story. And just as I started saying that, I remembered something. And I just said, you know, I just said it. And I knew what I was going to get from her. It was no sympathy there. She's like, well, you can live without your leg. It's no problem. You know, she's got one leg. And I looked at her and I said, you're right. And if you want to watch someone that has taken a bunch of beans and turned it into something else, that lady, her garden is usually blooming by March. That's how serious she is about living her life. And I think she's close to 80. I think she's up there. She's in her upper 70s. But she is a person that I look at and admire for what she has done. And then, you know, this morning I got up early, and I did what most of us do, except I got up and stumbled to the kitchen and turned the light on, and my coffee was ready. You know, I have one of those things where I set it before I go to bed, and it grinds my coffee, and it makes it before I get up. Usually it wakes me up, but this morning it didn't. I got my computer. I went and sat in my nice soft chair. My house was warm and dry. Everything went the way I planned it this morning. Or at least I think it did. What would have happened had it not? The other morning I got up in my coffee. I forgot to put the filter in my pot, and I had a mess. Well, guess what? I got to clean it up. I didn't complain because there was nobody there to listen to me. Phyllis was still in bed, and so I just cleaned it up. This week, I was doing some things that needed to be done. And on Wednesday, I decided to do something that I've been promising a client I would do for a couple weeks, and I know I've got to get it off my list. So I called him, and I said, I need the keys to the gate. And so I go to the office, I get the keys, I drive all the way to Hepzibah. I get out of my truck, I pull the keys out of my cup holder, and I look at them, and I'm like, these aren't the right keys. I knew, because I've got this set of keys in my truck for another building. And I was like, seriously, Doc? You know, you couldn't focus on it. I thought that, and then I text him, and I said, so I got all the way over here, and I got the wrong keys, and my phone rang just like that. Friday, we had a situation where things didn't go according to plan. Last week, Phyllis and I were on our way to the funeral, for Jolene's funeral, and again, we had plans, and it didn't work. It didn't happen the way we intended it to happen, and, you know, how do I respond? How was Horatio Spafford able to pen the words to the song, "It Is Well With My Soul," after losing his family? How was he able to do that? I'd like to look at that this morning and just kind of put that together. And in response to how I responded to not being able to get that sculpture, I went and got a milkshake. The doctor said, well, that didn't fix it. I said, no, but it made me forget it for a little bit. Made me feel a little better while I gained some weight. But I'd like to look at verses 2 to 4 in James chapter 1. James says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Now there's a couple words here I'm going to pull out, and there's three of them actually. It's count, know, and let. And if you were reading it in the King James, it was those are the three words that the King James uses. The NIV uses consider, know, and it does. It just says because you know. No, it doesn't use the word let. But the King James uses those three words, and there's a specific translations that I'd like to look at in those three words. In the word count, in the Phillips paraphrase says, when all kinds of trials and temptations crowd into your lives, my brothers, don't resent them as intruders, but welcome them as friends. When things don't happen the way I have them planned out, how do I respond? The definition for the word that goes with this, and I'm not going to try to say the Greek word because I will slaughter it. But this is the definition for that. The picture is that of one leading his or her mind through a reasoning process to arrive at a conclusion. The NIV uses the word consider. That word consider means to evaluate, to take time, to consider, to listen, to pay attention to what is happening. It involves careful thought, not a quick decision. It involves a conscious judgment resting on deliberate weighing of the facts. It denotes deliberate and careful judgment stemming from external proof, not subjective judgment based on feelings. It calls for a mental evaluation adopted as the result of due deliberation, the conscious acceptance of a definite inner attitude. It is also a mathematical term which says, stop, think about it, and come to a conclusion. Note that James doesn't say, if you face trials. He says, when. It's a given. Life happens. Life doesn't always go the way I plan it. In John 16:33, Jesus said to his disciples, he had been spending some time with them, and he was talking about the things that were going to happen over the next months, weeks, I don't know how long it was, but he was telling them some things that were going to happen. And then he says this, these things I have spoken to you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. 1 Peter 4, verse 12 says, beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial in which is to try you as though some strange thing happened unto you. I think of Horatio Spafford on that ship, on the spot where his children died, penning those words, "It is well with my soul." I can only imagine the turmoil that his heart and mind were going through at that time, but he understood that his peace was connected to Jesus Christ. It was not connected to his emotions at that time. Wiersbe defines joy as inward peace and sufficiency that is not affected by outward circumstances. The word fall, James says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you fall." The NIV says face, trials. I like the word face because it gives me a little better picture of what I think James is trying to say here. The ESV uses the word meet. In other words, when I'm walking through life and I face adversity. Wiersbe says this about that word: our values determine our evaluation. If we value comfort more than character, then trials will upset us. I got a ways to go on that. If we value the material and physical more than the spiritual, we will not be able to count it all joy. If we live only for the present and forget about the future, the trials will make us bitter, not better. Someone said, adversity introduces a man to himself. How do I respond to adversity? When I evaluate myself in the face of conflict, in the face of whatever, you put it in there. When I evaluate my response, what do I see? James is telling us to do that. Philippians 3:13, Paul says, "Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, and reaching forth unto those things which are before. I'm looking ahead, I'm not looking back." In our lesson this morning, I believe that Joseph understood, and he was looking ahead. He had a lot of things that he could go back and dig out, and he could have chosen retribution on his brothers. He could have chosen a lot of things, but he chose to forgive. He chose to look to the future and to understand that God had placed him there for a reason, for that time, and for a purpose. The second word is know. "For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness." Again, quoting from Phillips, "Realize that they come to test your faith and to produce in you the quality of endurance." Literally, what that means is that we learn by experience. So hopefully, as we respond properly to conflict, we learn from that experience and we do better the next time. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand and ask you how that's working out. I think for most of us, it's probably okay most of the time, but then something happens and we respond wrong. As I was studying this, there's something I did this week that I've got to go back to somebody. And it wasn't that I did anything wrong. It was a statement that I made to somebody about a customer that's not very nice. The customer's not very nice. And my statement wasn't very nice. And I need to go back to that person and say, you know what, I feel bad about what I said. Because it may have been true, but I shouldn't have said it. I'm learning by experience. To learn by experience is what that word know literally means. Knowledge possessed through the intellectual process of learning is one thing. How many of you have worked for people that know how it's supposed to be done, but couldn't do it? I worked for a contractor who was an electrical engineer, and he would send us out to the job, and he would say, I need you to do this little bit of electrical, and we'd go, and here he had been messing with it, and he had it all messed up. He couldn't wire a receptacle. He was an engineer. And we finally said, look, Jack, don't mess with that stuff. We'll fix it. Reuben worked for him, too. He's grinning back there, so he remembers some of those things. But he was a smart guy. He knew how it was supposed to work. But he couldn't do it. He absolutely couldn't do it. So knowledge is not all that we need. Knowledge gained by experience, by an active relationship between the one who knows and the person or thing known, is far superior to knowledge as an intellectual process. This word describes the latter quality of knowledge in what every Christ follower should desire as their personal permanent possession regarding the person of Christ. The experience of learning how to respond to conflict, the experience of understanding that there's something happening in my life when I am in the middle of conflict. Something should be changing. There's three things that we can know from this verse. Faith will always be tested. Testing works for us and not against us, and testing matures us. I thought about bringing a bag of sand this morning, and a lot of times in this verse we use the illustration of gold. But I thought about bringing a bag of sand and asking you to imagine, and just imagine that I got sand in my hand here. And I'd like for you to imagine that sand turning into glass that can go in that window. How many of you believe me that that's what happens? You know it. How many of you ever seen it happen? I have. And it's awesome. I'm serious. They dump that sand in that conveyor at one end, and it's so hot down there you can't stand it. I mean, it's hot. I think it was 3,500 degrees outside the kiln. It was hot. That glass comes out as red as the fabric on that bench. It's red. It's hot. I can't imagine that. They told us to look in, and that sand is just liquid, just popping, like water or like apple butter in the kettle, just popping. And when it came out the other end, all the way to the other end, it was perfect. Perfect glass. That intense heat is what turned that sand to glass. Barclay writes this. This word, hoopomone, I think is the way it's pronounced, does not mean the patience which sits down and it just accepts things. In other words, that's the way it'll always be. That's the way this person will always treat me. But the patience which masters it. It is not some romantic thing which lends us wings to fly over difficulties and hard places. It is a determination, unhurrying and yet undelaying, which goes steadily on and refuses to be deflected. When I deal with conflict, how do I deal with it? Do I allow it to change me? Or do I'm hoping it's changing you? Sometimes both. But most of the time it should be me that I'm focused on, not you. Obstacles do not daunt it, and discouragements do not take its hope away. It is the steadfast endurance which carries on until in the end it gets there. Job 2, verses 9 and 10. Job's wife said to Job, "Are you still maintaining your integrity? Curse God and die." Job never batted an eye. Job said, "Wait a minute. You're talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble?" In all of this, Job did not sin in what he said. You know, we've been conditioned to believe that we shouldn't have any conflict. And when you get there, let me know. I want to talk to you, because if you get to the point, Jonas, do you have conflict? You're the oldest guy here this morning. Hadn't got there yet, have you? Still dealing with it. But Job didn't sin in what he said. He understood that this test, this trial that God had allowed him to go through, was doing something in his life. The third word is let. Let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Again, going back to the Phillips paraphrase. But let the process go on until that endurance is fully developed, and you will find that you have become men of mature character with the right sort of independence. I like that. I'm going to read it again. But let the process go on until that endurance is fully developed, and you will find you have become men of mature character with the right sort of independence. This word let is an action word. It literally means to hold, to give possession, and to surrender. It means that I surrender to God. When these things happen, when my schedule changes, whatever it is, I surrender that to God and I allow Him to work in me. This was a quote that I found interesting. God cannot build our character without our cooperation. Let me ask you a question. You with young children, you that have had young children, what would happen if you as a parent would never allow your child to take the risk of falling when they're learning to walk? And every time that child tried to get up, you grab it. No, you might hurt yourself. I'm going to carry you to where you need to go. What would happen? They never learn to walk. And all of a sudden you'd have a 4-year-old that couldn't walk because their legs were too weak. You see, some of that process of learning to walk builds muscles. And we can hurt that child by not allowing that to happen. It's the same thing in my life. When I try to avoid conflict, when I try to avoid pain, when I try to avoid anything that God is allowing in my life to build character, I short-circuit what God's trying to do in my life. So in conclusion, you might ask the question, what does this have to do with being thankful? How many of you find yourself being thankful for conflict? Probably nobody. We don't like it. Try to avoid it. I would like to suggest that if we take these three verses, and we allow God to build and use that in our lives, it will lead to a grateful attitude. It will develop a whole new attitude in my life. When I see conflict as something God is using to build character in my life. You know, in our culture, and it's not just here, it's in Europe, it's everywhere, it's in France, it's in Asia. You see billboards, we're led to believe that life should always go our way. You know, if you're listening to the radio, if you're driving down the road, there's advertisements. If you just would get this, your life would be so much easier. Well, then you got to fix it when it breaks, because it's going to break. We're led to believe that we deserve the best and we should never encounter hard times or conflict. And then we don't know how to deal with things when that doesn't happen. When I understand that the difficulties of life are not roadblocks, but simply opportunities to grow, I can get them in a proper perspective. My response to adversity is a choice, and the way I respond to them will teach my children and my associates how to respond as well. In other words, my responses not only mature me, but they teach others. Not just my children. They teach those around me. And when I can learn, as Spafford did, in all of that pain, when I can learn that God has something different, something better, that He wants to build in my character, I can accept it. I can consider it joy. I can know that I am being stretched. And I can learn to submit and release it to Him. I'm going to read Deuteronomy 30, and then we're going to turn to Psalm 77. There's a couple verses I would like to just use in closing here. In Deuteronomy 30, this is Moses talking to the children of Israel. Maybe Joshua, I'm not sure here. I think it's Moses, because he is actually just before the transfer of leadership from Moses to Joshua. In verse chapter 31, that is what's happening. But in verse 15, he says, "See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in His ways, and to keep His commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. But if your heart turns away and you are not obedient, and if you are drawn away to bow down to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. This day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life, so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God, listen to His voice, and hold fast to Him. For the Lord is your life, and He will give you many years in the land He swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." God made it very clear. Moses made it clear here that God is giving you a choice. It's your choice how you respond when these things happen. He gives you a choice. It's your choice. It's my choice. And how I respond is how I'm going to learn. Turn over to Psalm chapter 77. I'm going to actually read the whole chapter, but the verses that I would like to look at are verses 16 to 20. "I cried out to God for help. I cried out to God to hear me. When I was in distress, I sought the Lord. At night I stretched out untiring hands, and my soul refused to be comforted. I remembered you, O God, and I groaned, I mused, and my spirit grew faint. You kept my eyes from closing. I was too troubled to speak. I thought about the former days, the years of long ago. I remembered my songs in the night. My heart mused, and my spirit inquired, 'Will the Lord reject forever? Will He never show His favor again? Has His unfailing love vanished forever? Has His promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has He in anger withheld His compassion?' Then I thought, 'To this I will appeal, the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your miracles of long ago. I will meditate on all your works and consider all your mighty deeds. Your ways, O God, are holy. What God is so great as our God? You are the God who performs miracles. You display your power among the peoples. With your mighty arm, you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you and writhed. The very depths were convulsed. The clouds poured down water. The skies resounded with thunder. Your arrows flashed back and forth. Your thunder was heard in the whirlwind. Your lightning lit up the world. The earth trembled and quaked. Your path led through the sea, your way through the muddy, mighty waters. Though your footprints were not seen, you led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron." Asaph was here and he was wondering, God, where are you? Have you left me? There's things happening that I don't know if I can, that I can work through this. I don't know if I can do this. And then in verse 12, he says, I will meditate on all your works and consider your mighty deeds. But then look at verse 16. The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you and writhed. The very depths were convulsed. The New Living Translation says, the Red Sea was afraid of you. God took them to the edge of the sea. And it was the wall. Literally, they were at the wall because the Egyptians were behind them. The sea was in front of them. There's no way out of this. And Asaph says, the water was afraid of your presence. And then in verse 20, he comes back around and he says, you led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. God led them to the Red Sea. And I can guarantee you that if God leads you to the Red Sea, He's going to get you through it. I'll guarantee you that. But it takes a personal relationship. Moses and Aaron were that connection for the Israelites. You and I have the Holy Spirit. And when He takes us to that sea, He'll take us through it. Scott, do you have a song? The folder. 124 in the folder. If you'll stand. Father, this morning, all of us experience conflict. All of us experience adversity. We experience things that we just find frustrating some days. And yet we understand that you, as the guiding force in our lives, are allowing us to go through those things to refine us, to turn us to gold, to glass, whatever it is you want to use to give us that. Father, help us to surrender ourselves to you and to surrender all that we have, all that we are, and to allow you to build that character that you want in our lives. Not for ourselves, but to bring honor to you. And to make a difference in those that we work with in their lives. To bring your word to those around us. Father, I just pray that you would go with us this week. As we go, as we work, as we travel, Father, just help us to remember that you're doing something in each of us through the things that you allow us to go through. And that when you take us to the edge of that sea, and the sea is in front of us and the Egyptians are behind us, that if you've taken us there, you will take us through it. You will never leave us or forsake us. And just ask a blessing on each one here this morning. In the activities that they have this week, that they would be able to see you in a special way. In Jesus' name, amen.